Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA/SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning and welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker coming off a little vacation up in Maryland on the 4th of July. It was fairly warm up there as it is down here, but man, when you're close to the water, it just doesn't matter. So we had a great week last week and we're back to business this week. On the show today, Judy Mode is here from Social Gastronomy. And she's going to talk to us a little bit about social networking and how social kind of works into the new business model. So, Judy, I want to welcome you in.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Good. So maybe you could tell us a little bit of background on you and kind of how you came to be where you are now.
Basically, I started as a chemical engineer by education.
Okay. There's a direct line to social networking, right?
Well, I'm asked that question all the time. How do you go from being a chemie to being active in social business? I say 30 years of experience. And I've been blessed to have followed the maturity of the industries over that period of time. And so I've worked in a lot of different industries, petrochemical, oil and gas, of course, environmental process. I was in the semiconductor industry for 10 years. Jumped into technology back in 2000 on the software
Perfect
hardware
timing.
Side.
Yeah,
I know. Wait, I didn't make it when everyone was becoming a millionaire.
That's right.
I hit it.
You
on
hit
the,
it right at the,
I hit it at the back
this
end.
Is my time now. Oh, whoops, I missed it.
But it was great because it forced me to get pretty tight on the value proposition of the organizations that I was working for. And then I stepped into global consulting services and working on projects for an Israeli-based company. And then really came into this through technology, started with a company here in Atlanta that is a custom software application development, and they were building enterprise social networks at a point in time when nobody knew what an enterprise social network was.
Now, when was that? What year was that?
That was back in 2007.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was very, very early.
It's so funny. You think back to 2007. It's, what, 4 years ago, 3 years ago? And it's like, oh, it wasn't even, you know, it wasn't even on the map then, and now it seems to be like all the rage.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as we talk about it further, there's been a real shift in the market. And I think that organizations are really starting to better understand what impact it's having on their business models, and how that's going to touch sales, revenue, and ultimately their market share. So it's been exciting to be on the forefront of this. And then I realized that a lot of the executives that I was helping from a software perspective were more and more asking me to help them build their business cases for the investment in the software. And so back in 2009, I stepped over to the dark side, which is the consulting side, in starting Social Gastronomy to really do that for these executives.
So tell us a little bit more about a concept that we chatted a little bit about, which was enterprise relationship management. What's that all about?
Yeah, sure. It's not something that's new. And in fact, enterprise relationship management was coined as a competency about 10 years ago. And it was really about how do we focus on taking our core relationships within the organization, both internally and externally, and find a way not only to manage them, to make them accountable, but do so in such a way that we all walk away with a really positive experience. The challenge that we had 10 years ago is we didn't have the technology to support it. So what happened is we started to fragment the management of relationships. So we ended up with customer relationship management, and people know that as CRM, partner relationship management, human or employee relationship management. Well, now flash forward 10 years, now the technologies have caught up that we now have the capability truly to create an end-to-end relationship management structure, starting with the way that we find customers out in the public social networks. How do we bring them back into the communities of interest that we own within our own domain? And then how do we support those relationships internally with our employees to drive product innovation, research and development, all the things that we do as companies?
So it sounds like this is almost as much team building or management tool as it is a sales tool.
Absolutely. So if you look at the power of a network, you know, think about what you do offline. These networks exist already. What we now have the ability to do is to interact within these relationship structures on these networks online, in much greater volume, at much greater speed than ever before. So certainly collaboration, knowledge transfer, knowledge sharing within an organization is a critical path, and that is a large part of where the soft ROI of social business comes into play. But more and more companies are looking at how do we build the way that we interact around our business processes, how do we make it easier for people to do that within an organization? And the challenge that we've had is we try to put too much structure on everything because we were trying to improve the efficiency of our organizations to reduce the cost structure. That's great, but at the end of the day, we're still people, mm-hmm. and we have a need to interact around the things that we do as a business. Now we can do that online as well as we do it offline.
You talked about technology catching up to this whole concept. How has that changed? I mean, what have been the big innovations that you've seen in the last several years that have allowed technology to catch up with this concept?
Well, if you think I basically date myself when I do these kind of radio shows and presentations, because I tell people I started in business before the fax machine.
Oh yeah.
So I have personally lived through the evolutions of fax machine and voicemail and email and personal computers and mobile phones and so forth. And so every technology disruption has caused a disruption in the market, because if you think about it, look at the companies that either built their entire business models on the new way of doing business, or those companies who figured it out quickly and were able to then enable their organizations to leverage that new capability. The same thing's happening with social. And what was interesting, in order to put this in context for a CEO, we went back and looked at how many companies were new companies on the Fortune 100 every time there was a major disruption like this in the market. And what really shocked us is during the decade of web, the web technologies, two-thirds of the Fortune 100 were brand new companies. So if these are the highest revenue-producing companies, and all of a sudden they got wiped off the list.
Wow.
And so we believe this will have the same impact. Now, I tell people if I knew how many and if I knew who, then I'd quit social gastronomy.
I'd hire you.
That's right. You'd hire me, right?
That's right.
Because then we'd be really, really rich.
Yeah, man, we would have no problem.
We'd be rich.
We would be in great shape.
But the point is, it's going to have that same. And we're starting to already see the shift in market leadership by virtue of those early adopter innovative companies who are already on the forefront of this.
How do you see this is changing the kind of marketing and selling relationship? I think that it's interesting to think about it as a management tool. I'd never really thought of that. But in terms of your baseline, looking for prospects for whatever business or widget you sell, how has this all changed that relationship and how it all works?
Well, it changed because the buyers changed. Mm. So if you look at here again, 30 years, I used to be the educator for our client, right? So I would travel in a car. Of course, I was going from one natural gas plant to another. And I would have collateral in my trunk, and I would have brochures. And because I called on all the gas plants, I knew what was going on. I knew the competitive landscape. And those executives came to rely a lot on what we were doing in my particular area of expertise. Well, with the web, we went from not enough information to now we have simply too much information, right? I asked the question, you know, who has too few emails in their inbox, right? Because if you want some, I'll sell you some.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I get cheap. And so the cost of email communication has become such that from a marketer's perspective, we are like, well, why not do it? Because we can. Well, I question that. And what's happened is that as buyers, it's more and more difficult for us to now figure out what we need because let's just use CRM, for example. There are, 300 million different documents on CRM right now that are indexed by Google. Well, as a buyer, how do I begin that process? So buyers are now relying on these peer-to-peer networks where there are other people like them who have already gone through this process, whether they already know what their solution is, or more importantly, at the stage when they really don't even know what they're looking for, they just know that they've got a problem. And so the disconnect right now is that the buyers are now in these networks doing their buying process, but it's really not being supported by the vendors. The vendors are doing a lot of traditional messaging and communication and pushing out content when the buyers really aren't engaging yet around that content. And so in our organization and in my team, that's what we do, is we help our clients figure out what that landscape looks like, and we get them in the game with those buyers, not because we're trying to pitch and sell to them, but because we're trying to help them and educate them. And in that process, our client becomes the thought leader in their respective industry.
So really, it's taking all this content that they have and fine-tuning it to exactly what it needs to be, more of as a scalpel versus a machete or whatever the term was, right?
You know, how do you sift through? There are 20,000 videos on CRM, on YouTube. How do you figure out which are the two that are most relevant to you? But the challenge from a vendor's perspective is, if you think about the role of a sales organization, they were accountable for making sure that whatever that client did, product or service, was a good fit for that buyer. Well, now that fit discussion is happening on these networks without their support. So very specific example, if I could share with you. A senior sales executive for a very large software company called and said, look, I've got three problems and I don't know what to do. I'm like, well, all right, you know,
let's go, right?
Tell Judy. And his first problem was that before these social networks, whenever someone wanted to look at their software, they would be forced to come to them to request a demonstration of that software. So that was a very early indicator that at least there was some level of interest in their offering. Well, now there are videos all over YouTube and on other networks where customers and users, partners have created their own videos about how to use their software.
Right. And it's right or wrong or whatever, right? No quality there.
Well, but the challenge is they're also talking about how they've applied the software, whether it's working or not working, right?
So it's like a customer review practice.
And so it's the credentialing and the referencing that are already baked into this process. And if you're not involved and you're not engaged, then this is happening without you.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, the second problem that he had is that in some cases, clients will ultimately end up raising their hand by calling a sales rep or coming to their site and asking them to fit these requirements that they had already defined in the market. Well, in many cases, they don't do what these guys are asking them to do, but they think they do. Right. So there's a perception of that. The flip side of it is when they figure out after the fact that they lost a deal, they basically do their intelligence behind the scenes and learn that they lost a deal because the client believed that they didn't do something that they really do very, very well, both of which are articulated on the software company's website. But the challenge is they never got there. They already made the decision about their requirements. They built their long list of vendors. They apply the requirements to the vendors to create the short list, and they're only reaching out to those companies that are on the short list. And if you haven't been involved, you don't even know that you missed the opportunity, nor were you in a position to affect it in any way.
For if you were looking at your typical business, what do you think the most important social media application or technology out there is to have?
Well, there is no one and done, And I think that there's been, and it really is the maturity of the market, right? So there are very, very large networks like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn for the mm-hmm. business community. But it's very fragmented. So buyers are not, they don't have a one and done strategy. It's not like they go to Facebook and they're finished, or they go to LinkedIn and they're finished. In fact, there are now hundreds of thousands of social networks in every industry created by trade associations, publications,
right.
user groups. And so the most important thing that you can do, which is really a part of what we have to do on behalf of our clients, is figure it out. So we do the research to help them define that universe and then do the prioritization within that universe in terms of how we're going to apply our buyer targeting and our network selling. Because you're not going to just go broadly out to the market and wherever and whenever. You can't afford it, number one. But secondly, the more targeted that you are in your approach as it pertains to social, the more effective you are. So you want to go, to your point, very, very laser focused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we had talked before the show started on the social executive council that you started a few years back. That was an interesting concept. How did that get going?
Yeah, and in fact, it was myself, my business partner Matt Rosenhaft, and a chief information officer here in the Atlanta market, Dan Weber. And how it came to be was simply that people asked me to do it. After about 20 executives said, "Judy, do something. Where is that group that is talking about social from a business perspective? Where is that group that's looking at how do we connect the dots within the organization?
Right.
Where is that group that looks at it from a strategic perspective? I'm tired about hearing about Facebook and Twitter because I don't really know how it applies to my business, and there simply wasn't one." And so as a pilot, we launched the Social Executive Council, but we did it as an online network. So we started it as a group within LinkedIn, and then we started to reach out into the community here in Atlanta. We started with chief information officers and talked about the Social Executive Council, invited them to breakfast, and a whole group of them showed up, and they all joined.
Hey, wow.
And so we knew that we had hit a chord in the market. So let's flash forward a year later. We've continued to evolve the group by virtue of the fact that I have these kind of conversations almost on a daily basis with new members who are joining the group, because it's not about me and the leadership team. It's really about the members. So now we're at 1,700 executives from almost 30 different countries. We probably have 30% of the Fortune 500 represented at the senior executive level. And what's more important is that we will continue to evolve the group as the market changes, as people learn. This is not a two-day evolution. This is a 3 to 5 year stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, some CIOs believe if you look at all of the changes organizationally that have to occur in this new way of doing business, some say it may take even 8 years for some of the larger organizations to really get it all the way through and think about the web. The web had a very similar path.
So when you're working with new clients, is it usually the CIO or that type of a position that you're typically working with, or is it on the sales side in marketing, or is it on the CEO side? Who are you usually working with?
Well, in our business, we kind of have two separate sides of the organization. So one side of our organization is our marketing services group, where we're basically driving lead generation for our clients through engaging in these networks. So certainly our executive sponsor there is normally that individual who has responsibility for marketing and sales,
because
they're accountable to revenue.
Mm-hmm.
We like that accountability because we're accountable to that revenue. From a social business perspective, certainly the CIO is a core stakeholder in that, because ultimately they're responsible for the infrastructure and the architecture that's going to support these network interactions and how they're applied to the business processes, how they apply and are integrated into their current customer relationship management, marketing automation, how they do product innovation. We're also starting to see more chief operations officers get involved, as we've been recommending within the Social Executive Council, that you need to operationalize this, and that's one of the core areas that we do focus on within the group, in addition to how do we build business justification, business impact, and then what kind of impact will it have on my organization. But then there are other stakeholders. So human resources is very much involved in the employee networks. Your heads of R&D are very much involved in terms of how this applies to how the organization does R&D. Mm. So if you start looking at the business process layer, then the executives in those functional areas are very much involved. In fact, most larger organizations now have social business committees of 40 to 50 different people who each in their own areas are doing something with social today.
And circling back to the Social Executive Council, what do you see as a vision for that organization? What's kind of their mission statement?
Well, I think that our first of all, we shifted from being kind of a thought leadership community to really being a business operations community. And that really came out of the conversations that I've had with these executives, is that coming back to the fact that there's so much information out there, they don't know which are the 452 websites they need to go to figure this out. And so we realized that if we do this right, we have the opportunity to really bring the leaders of this industry into this community in such a way that they showcase their leadership and their capabilities and what impact that they've already had. Because right now, there isn't a single company that you can go to buy a social business program. IBM doesn't have it. Oracle doesn't have it. Google doesn't have it. They all want it, but it's not there yet. So this is a very fragmented industry, both at the technology layer, the architecture, the process layer. So think people, process, technology. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is we're bringing in those organizations that are really the leaders in their respective areas so that we can help connect the dots within the community to make it that much easier for an executive to figure out what that path looks like, what that roadmap looks like, and who does he need to bring to the table from an execution perspective.
Hmm. We talked a little bit about the Global Social Business Summit that I think you're launching. That is that this year?
Yeah, so here again, it came out of my conversations with the members, and we've been having events our first year, because we were a LinkedIn group, if you think about it. I started to partner with other events around the country and also in other countries where we would bring speakers from the Social Executive Council. We did one in Los Angeles. We did one in New York. We did some here in Atlanta. In fact, we brought a panel of speakers to the European Corporate Social Media Summit in London in November. And out of that, I started to learn more about the topics that were being covered in these events, but more importantly, the topics that weren't being covered.
Right.
And so we realized there was a significant need within our membership and the broader population to have a business summit focused on the C-suite. And so it's all things social from a CXO perspective. Hmm. But the other thing is we're doing it a little bit non-traditional. We're doing it as a leadership development program. So we're working with other members within the Social Executive Council who are responsible for leadership development in global companies so that these CEOs, CMOs, CIOs walk out of that 1 or 2 day summit with a very tangible, very actionable plan that they can then apply in their own companies rather than, hey, I learned a lot, and then they go back home and forget everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, when is that being held?
We're targeting the first one for France in the fall. We're talking right now about San Francisco, Dallas, New York, Chicago. But as we talked about before, right now we're lining up the sponsors because we did incorporate as a nonprofit, but I have a nonprofit of $0. So we have good intentions and we've got a lot of sweat equity in the Social Executive Council. But we are working with much larger companies to help fund this because the need is there. The interest is there. The speakers are there. Now we just need to pay for it.
Did you say France was going to be the first one?
Yeah. So there's a couple of companies that are headquartered in Paris that have expressed an interest in doing this. So we're just kind of working out the details, and they would hold it at their global headquarters.
So you'd have the whole people there to make sure everyone knew what they were talking about in the different languages and all that good stuff?
Well, fortunately, English is the language of the business. So, but yes, in already starting to garner interest We're talking to people in the UK, Spain, Italy, Germany, Switzerland. And so nobody has said no at this point. And these are, you know, chief marketing, chief information, all the way up into line of business presidents who are coming.
Great. That sounds like fun.
It'll be fun.
You got a couple things going on, it sounds like.
I'm a little bit busy. Yes. Yes, I am.
That's great. That is great. Well, is there anything else that that you think would be important for our listeners to know about, you know, working in that social area in order to improve their business?
Well, I think, first of all, have a focus on the business. And I think that one of the lessons that we learned within our company is that we talk about business first and social second. So social becomes a means of execution. Yep. It's a means to an end, not the end.
Right.
And I think that's really helped us, and more importantly, helped our clients in defining goals and objectives that are very, very measurable and accountable to the business. The greatest challenge, and I think I shared with you, I recently wrote a post in the Social Executive Council called Open Letter to CEOs, because so many people were coming to me saying, in 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, I have to meet with the president, chairman of my board to talk about social. And I don't, what's that going to look like? And I said, it's not about social. It's about the business and then how social applies. So that's really my number one is, as you know, as people are already responsible for this within their own organization or they're looking to get into this area, is eyes on the prize and make sure that's very tangible, very measurable, and the rest will come.
Yeah, so figure out what it is that you're actually trying to do and what your business is all about, what you're trying to get.
And then how this helps.
Yeah, and then, okay, now let's figure out, as a tool, do you use a Twitter or do you use a LinkedIn or do you use a Facebook or whatever other sites?
And the tools are certainly there, but it's also the process. Mm-hmm. So recently I had a conversation with the chief information officer about a particular technology that she was looking to bring into her company. And I said, where is the value of the technology? Is it the technology itself or how your business applies the technology? She said, well, of course, it's how we apply it. I said, well, where's the intellectual property around how you apply this within your business? Well, it's in email. It's in all of these disparate areas. So what the networks allow us to do is create a centralized environment where we can actually interact around the applications of our business in such a way that it's much more efficient, much more effective, but ultimately more empowering to us as individuals for whatever our particular, you know, leg of the stool is. Mm-hmm. And so I think the most exciting part is how we apply this to business process. How do we serve our customers better? How do we innovate better, right? How do we collaborate better? All the things that are our hard objectives that we can now do through the application of networks across our organization.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, a growing business that seems to be exploding, and hopefully you're riding the wave on it.
I hope so too, because I'll be honest with you, I've basically put my entire life savings into this endeavor and this venture, and I believe it. It is the future. And I'm just really grateful to be having been a part of it from the beginning.
Well, good. Well, before we sign off, let me ask you one last question. And this is not necessarily about your the business or what you're doing right now, but the years of experience that you've had in...
you can say decades. People say... I recently was a speaker, and she said, Judy Mode has decades of experience.
Wow.
I'm like, wow,
hey,
I feel so old.
Pull me back from decades, okay? Keep me to years for a little while, right? So from that experience that you've had, what would be the pearl of wisdom that you'd share with our listeners on what you feel has helped you get to where you are and what you've seen helps other executives be successful in business?
Yeah, I've been very fortunate. I think there are like two kind of driving mantras that have enabled me to end up where I am today. I think, first of all, my favorite quote, and everybody who knows me knows that this is my favorite quote, is life isn't about finding yourself, it's about creating yourself. And I've taken that to heart very, very early. If you think about, I was in the petrochemical industry at a time when there were no women, and I was one of the very, very few across the country. I could tell you who they all were, right? We were in the club. but more importantly, I wanted to make sure that every step along the way that I would find the ways to create myself out of that. What would be a new learning? What would be a new industry? What would be a new application? What would be a new role in the organization? And I think that's what's led me on this path. And so my parents' generation were ones who worked at one company for 50 years, and thank God for that because they have a good pension, so yay.
Well, some of them do, let me tell you. And that doesn't happen anymore.
No, sure. No. But I grew up in the non-pension, and I think that was helpful in that there was an expectation that you would go work for one company, you'd be done. Well, that didn't happen. And I think that you have an opportunity to really create your own path and then figure out what you need to fill that path, and then just go after it. And more importantly, trust and build those relationships that will support that journey, because you're going to need people. Nobody can do this on their own. And I think that's the greatest mistake that people make, is that they only look for help when they need it, and they actually don't build relationships just to build relationships, and then hopefully they will be there when you need them.
Yeah.
So I think that's my pearl of wisdom.
All right. Well, Judy, thank you very much. We appreciate your time and having you on today.
No, it was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up with you in the near future.
I look forward to that.
All right. Well, for our listeners, we appreciate your time and attention this morning. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.